Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper.
Shazam!
I am your host, Eddie Van Weva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Chad Billy Batson Riley.
Hey there.
I see you looking at me.
I can't wait.
And also with us, we have Spencer Gluttony Williams.
Why did you pick that one? You are the meanest person I know, just so you know.
We got a great show in stores. We're going to be talking about the upcoming film Shazam. So stick around as we talk about that and get into a little bit of the parts that we liked and we didn't like. So, yeah. But before we do, Chad, give him an opening credits.
Like a hero still learning to use his abilities, the Filmlosophers podcast is presented by and subject to the whims of Mingle Media TV and VGB Studios. Their power flows through us, so to speak. New episodes crack like thunder across the digital sky each Wednesday morning on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Libsyn, Player FM, and Audio Boom.
Sometimes the word family describes a group you're born into, and other times it's a way of labeling the close connections you choose or are forced upon you.
Oh, it's Spencer. I knew we meant
There's
more
that
than just
sunny
that.
Optimism we love about you.
So why not choose to call us family? You can connect with us anytime on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers or on Twitter at twitter.com/philosophy101. You may not get to pick your favorite superpowers, but you can choose your own adventure when it comes to catching up on our recent reviews.
Yes, you can.
Take a look at our episode library by visiting filmlosophers.com.
Yes, sir. We got over 150 episodes, all chock full of great information that you can totally peruse and enjoy because we love talking. Nevertheless, we love talking. But like we said, you can check all that out at our website at filmlosophers.com, and you can find all the information. But we are not talking about old episodes. We are talking about what's in the future, and what's in the future is Shazam. So this film has been one of the more talked about films coming out of Warner Brothers and DC for 2019. It's been one of those movies where, with the recent shift with Wonder Woman and Aquaman coming out of that whole dark color palette and moving more into a lighter tone, almost fun, it just seemed like the right choice to do this particular character. And if you're familiar with this character's comic book history, you know that it's just chock full of just ridiculousness. So before we get into that, Chad, why don't you give him that official synopsis goodness?
I'll sure try. We all have a superhero inside us. It just takes a bit of magic to bring it out. In Billy Batson's case, by shouting out one word,
Shazam!
This streetwise 14-year-old foster kid can turn into the adult superhero Shazam, courtesy of an ancient wizard. Still a kid at heart, inside a ripped godlike body, Shazam revels in this adult version of himself by doing what any teen would do with superpowers. Have fun with them. Can he fly? Does he have X-ray vision? Can he shoot lightning out of his hands? Can he skip his social studies test? Shazam sets out to test the limits of his abilities with the joyful recklessness of a child, but he'll need to master these powers quickly in order to fight the deadly forces of evil controlled by Dr. Thaddeus Savannah.
That's right.
This was like a full synopsis.
That's actually really good, too.
Like lead-in without giving you too many spoilers.
Yeah. True. Directed by David F. Sandberg, the film stars Asher Angel, Zachary Levi, Mark Strong, Jack Dylan Grazer, and Jamin Hansu. The filmmakers cite the teen fantasies Big, 1988, and the most recent Netflix series Stranger Things as an influence on the making of this film, which is completely visible. Like, you see it throughout every facet of this film. It's very much obvious where they pulled a lot of their influences, not just from these particular two, but other films as well. A little bit of information on both DC and Marvel. If you're a little bit confused about the name, both DC Comics and Marvel Comics have a hero called Captain Marvel, whose films star Jaman Hansu and release in 2019. However, both are different. Shazam, which is the one that was released in 2019, is a male teenager who received godly powers and a superhuman form. Captain Marvel, however, is a female superhero from 2019 as well, who received alien powers. DC's Captain Marvel is the original, first hitting stands in 1939. DC renamed their New 52 Rebirth version of Captain Marvel to Shazam in 2012, due to, in part, Marvel holding the trademark on the name. However, DC still produces versions named Captain Marvel in print and animation. So, there's been a little bit of confusion on some parts of those who don't really know the comic book lore, but find out, oh, well, there used to be a Captain Marvel back in the day with DC. Is this the same character that traverses both brands? No. Two different people, two different characters.
Boy, girl.
True.
Like, isn't there a Captain Marvel in Marvel that's a male?
Yeah, that's true. The first one was a guy.
Marvel. Yeah. I mean, semantics. in terms of numbers-wise,
there have been numerous boys and numerous girls that have...
Exactly.
Born the moniker Captain Marvel over in Marvel. But I think the Captain Marvel, the DC Captain Marvel, Shazam, the Shazam Captain Marvel, mm-hmm. I think actually predates Marvel having the name Marvel Comics. I think 1939 is before Marvel Comics was officially Marvel Comics. I say that from a position of, once again, not having done my homework. So don't trust me.
Well, it looks like Marvel Comics was founded in 1961.
Aha!
So, there you go.
Score one for the homework list guy.
In terms of numbers-wise, we don't really have any of those because of the fact that the film has not debuted in theaters quite yet. We got a chance to check out an actual press screening, so a screening before the major debuts. And so we saw this film before it went out publicly. But we do know the budget of this film, which is kind of... interesting and surprising at the same time, because the budget only sits at $85 million, and it's weird to say that $85 million doesn't sound like a lot, but in terms of like these major motion pictures that are being done for comic book superheroes, there's usually a lot of money behind it. Like, you look at any of these Marvel films, any of the Marvel superhero films, and most of them are in the hundreds. I believe Captain Marvel was $200 million, wasn't it?
I don't think it was that. It was like 150 or 140. They're good chunk of change.
Yeah.
Now Captain Marvel, though, I mean, you had like the permanent, continual de-aging stuff with Samuel L. Jackson, who was in most of the movie, and you know, you had a lot more reliant. You're relying a lot more on the effects. This movie, you didn't have to rely on the effects as much because, it's more. I mean, they're punctuation marks. It's not like start to finish special effects.
Yeah, very true.
Minus, I would say the bad guy actually had more special effects than the good guy.
Yeah, because of the eye and everything. So, kind of just jumping into this conversation for this particular film, as you can tell, we're a little more versed in Marvel lore, so to speak. We do know comics. We do follow other comic stories. We do know ins and outs and most of the lore for most of them. But when it comes to certain DC properties such as Captain Marvel, it does take a little bit of us digging back into what we do know to help us have a better idea. And thankfully, with this particular film, there's enough of information in the backstory of like old copies such as the New 52 Rebirth series to give us kind of a launching pad, which I actually hold in my hand right here as I raise it up, and nobody who's listening
here's
to
one of the things that you may not know, you probably do if you've listened for any length of time, is that I don't do my homework. Eddie always does his homework. Like, if there's ever a source book or TV show or movie that's being remade, like, he will go and consume whatever that thing is so that he can draw parallels. I really appreciate that about him. Because it covers over people like me. And Spencer, I appreciate you because you will literally look it up right on your computer screen as the conversation's happening if you didn't know it before. I just sit here and talk.
That's
I don't
true.
Try at all.
Well, there goes the magic, folks. Now you know. No, but looking through, so like Chad said, I did read through the New 52 Rebirth.
How many times?
Three times.
Yep.
And I did, because this was where they said they were going to draw most of their inspiration for the film. minus obviously cinematic inspirations like we mentioned earlier with Stranger Things and Big. Those are the cinematic impressions that they have in the film. Comic book wise, the New 52 run of Shazam, which gave birth, so to speak, to the new name for Captain Marvel for DC. It's actually really close in terms of parallel storylines with the film. And so it's interesting that they chose to go the route of almost doing it shot for shot, not so much shot for shot, but beat for beat as the comic book as on screen.
Hmm.
Now, mind you, whether or not it actually worked, that's something we'll reveal as we continue the conversation. But it is an interesting choice to make, taking everything that people can already see in comic book form. This book right here cost me like $12, and I pretty much knew what was going to happen in the Shazam film from beginning to end. But did it take away from my experience of watching the film?
Time will tell.
But
this is a spoiler-free review.
It is a spoiler-free.
So Eddie's read this thing 3 times and seen the movie, and he's only going to be able to talk about 20% of it or so.
Thanks a lot. No, so going to expectations, talking about the film, like I said, let me take a step back. I can only speak for myself in terms of DC knowledge because I'm not a big DC fan. That's very rare, aside from Batman, and the Shazam storyline was actually really fun. There's not many other storylines that I'm aware of. However, I don't know the other side of the table where your guys' knowledge lies, and so I'm going to start with Spencer because it sounds like his is going to be the quickest answer as to how much knowledge do you have prior to this particular film.
About Shazam?
Well, about anything in the DC universe.
Okay. most of my information comes from the
If you say the Batman animated TV series,
that's
I'm going to
the first
reach
thing.
Over. Oh, Lord.
That's most of it right there. And then occasionally watching the Superman animated series as well. And then the rest of it comes from reading Wikipedia articles about the Crisis on Infinite Earths and Infinite Crisis because I found that interesting.
Really?
Yeah.
That is actually interesting. All right, Mr. Chadley.
Yeah, hi.
How deep does the well go for Chad's DC knowledge?
Not all that deep.
Okay.
I did read quite a few comics intermittently growing up. I mean, I whatever I could find that looked interesting, I tried to get. I didn't always get it because allowance money is finite. and charm only works sometimes when dealing with parental figures. So I've read quite a few different pieces of storylines. I don't know that growing up I really had a unified experience of the DC Comics universe, but I did see all the Batman live action movies, unfortunately, Joel Schumacher. I did watch the animated series. I've seen several of the animated films, obviously all of the DCEU films, which I enjoyed Man of Steel, and then they went way south with Batman versus Superman for me, but then, you know, they've been recovering slowly since, especially with Wonder Woman. You can hear all about Wonder Woman and how we thought about it in Lesson 65.
It's true.
Which was nearly 100 episodes ago. That's crazy.
Wow.
I mean, that's insane. Anyway, so they've been improving. And I had high hopes for this one because Shazam, Captain Marvel, whatever you want to call him, I didn't really have a lot of familiarity with him. I knew that he was a kid who said a magic word and became an adult hero that was sort of like Superman in a lot of ways. And that's about everything that I knew.
So
before reading the New 52 Shazam three times in preparation for this movie, what did you know?
The most I knew of Shazam, sadly, was probably from the Flashpoint run from The Flash. When it was a short graphic novel that they did during, I think, 2012 or 2011. I could be wrong. And the storyline was pretty much the Barry Allen ends up going back in time and saves his mom. You may have remembered this from the second season or third season.
One of them, yeah.
Yeah, second or third season of The Flash. Might have been the second. Either way, Barry Allen goes back in time, stops his mom from getting killed. Everything changes. You come to find out that Bruce Wayne is the one who died, and Thomas Wayne is the one who becomes Batman. You have a huge old war between Diana and the Amazonians, and Arthur Curry and the Atlanteans. But the unique thing is that the Shazam family, which there are multiple kids that are in the Shazam family, but they actually, when they say Shazam, they create one person. So they create one Shazam. So it's interesting how that story was portrayed, because there's a unique way how they actually end up, they kill Shazam in that movie or in that storyline. So it's really interesting. But in terms of depth of knowledge, cartoons, the Batman storylines, a few of my favorites that I've read, including the New 52 Rebirth run, because the Shazam one I just recently read. I didn't read it when it came out. And I liked the Batman Metal run that they did recently. But I don't have a lot of depth in this. I'm kind of like Spencer, but a little bit more, just with a few comics here and there.
I did forget one important reference.
Yes.
I watched live broadcasts of the first two seasons of Chuck.
Oh, I was going to say, cinematically, however, my references for this movie... obviously, big Chuck fan, Zachary Levi, but I think I just might be a Mark Strong fan more so than that. I wanted more than anything in this movie to hear him sing Country Roads.
I knew you were going to bring it up.
More time. And I would have cried in the theater again. Yes.
I think you did cry still.
I did cry in the theater. It was magnificent. But Mark Strong's one of those performers is just like, I don't know. He always plays a very complicated character, and I like him. So between Mark Strong and Zachary Levi, and that's it. Oh, and then Jack Dylan Grazer from It, who he plays the same motor mouth kid, type of kid in this one as he did in It. It's just very rapid. He's very on the point, very witty. There's not a lot, and I think that's where a lot of the budget kind of was tightened, getting a lot of individuals that aren't really that well known, aside from the three main characters like that. Because even the main kid, Asher Angel, I'm not too familiar.
He's a Disney Channel star. I literally, right now it's springtime. I don't know when you all are listening, but when we're recording it, it's springtime 2019, dating ourselves. So in the spring, here in Sacramento, where we're headquartered and where we record out of, they always have this event in the early summer called Kidtopia. And every springtime, right about now, there are these ridiculous, like, I don't know, like a flood of advertisements on the radio for Kidtopia. And so whenever I turn to the Top 40 station... the pop station, it's all Kidtopia advertisements in between songs. And Asher Angel is one of the celebrities who will be at Kidtopia. So it's just a name that I've heard for about a month on the radio already. And I'm like, oh, he's that kid.
Huh.
But apparently he's a Disney Channel star. I don't know what he's on.
It says here Andy Mack. I've never heard of it. It's only a few years old, 2 years old.
All I have to say is, aside from the main guy, there is one character that absolutely steals your heart and steals the show. Every scene that she's in. And I kept trying to place the actress. And then it finally dawned on me right before I fell asleep last night after the movie. She's the younger daughter of Randall and Beth in This Is Us. There's two sisters. She's the little one. She plays one of... Billy Batson's foster sisters named Darla.
That's
and she's
right.
Adorable.
Okay, she looks more recognizable without her glasses.
Yeah.
It's without the glasses.
Well, because I kept telling you over and over, I'm like, yeah. I recognize her, yeah. I recognize her, but she's so young, I don't know where I would have seen her before. But yeah, then I figured it out.
Ah, we got it. Did you get it, Spencer?
I don't watch that show, so I don't know.
Spencer doesn't like tears.
You monster.
I don't watch stories about crockpots killing people.
You know what?
Wow, spoiler alert.
You know what?
Everyone's heard that. It was in the news.
You know what? coming back to the film, yeah,
crock pots are very reliable. Okay,
we have one right now that is keeping food warm over there, Spencer.
It's true. It's right behind us.
Exactly. But with that type of knowledge on hand, and both our DC comic history and our cinematic memories of certain performers, I want to talk about expectations. Sorry. And in terms of expectations, one of the biggest things I think that plays a big role in our expectations for the film is honestly what has come before it. All the films that precede this particular film. Because this film, it lands in a franchise, in a universe, if you will. You have to base this on what all the other films have been based on in its universe. Of course, it also is judged by its own merits as well. But in terms of what you expect, you can only expect what you have already seen. And we have seen quite a bit from the DCEU. Is that what it is? The DCEU?
The DC Extended Universe, okay. Which is the DCEU.
It's just doing the most. So,
which, this is a bit of a history lesson, but Filmlosophers of Days Gone By, which, unfortunately, back in the day, we didn't have Spencer here in our third chair. We kind of had a rotating cast of various voices and faces. But back in the day, our first DCEU podcast review on record was Batman versus Superman. Would you care to guess what lesson number that was, Eddie?
Lesson 26.
Lesson number 3.
Ha!
It makes you feel old, doesn't it?
Oh my gosh.
And lesson number 3, Batman versus Superman.
And I believe on that episode we had Sean Long, YouTuber Sean Long, join us with that particular conversation to add his commentary. Wow. Okay. There you go.
Yeah.
Well, interestingly enough, knowing what the state of the current DCEU is and where it's kind of sitting at, because if you look at the full history of what the DCEU has offered to fans, you're looking at everything from Man of Steel to BVS to Justice League to Wonder Woman to Suicide Squad.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I forgot about
and
that.
And then Aquaman. No, I'm sorry. Suicide Squad came out before Wonder Woman.
Suicide Squad was less than 22. Wonder Woman was less than 65. So yeah, they were out first.
Oh, there you go. Suicide Squad, then Wonder Woman, then Aquaman, and then we have Shazam. Which Aquaman just debuted a few months ago, back in November. So it hasn't been too long, but nevertheless, with the current state of where the DC Extended Universe is, I want to talk about what are some of the expectations that we had going into this film and what we were hoping to see and even not see. Because I know it's one thing to have hopes for seeing, oh, I want to see, you know, Superman make a debut or Batman to swing in through or Aquaman to show up riding a dolphin, or I don't know, something to that extent. There's always the
sounds
the hope.
About right.
There's always the hope, but with the way this universe, this franchise has been, I honestly think I have more not wanting to seize than wanting to seize in this particular film. Mm. So let's go ahead and start with Spencer and talk about expectations. What were you expecting coming to the film before the film even started?
So I saw the trailer for this movie, and I did not want to see this movie.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, we have to talk about this for a second. I'm sorry. Spencer has been anti-Shazam for forever. ever since the trailer debuted, that's right, he has been loathing the day where we were going to have to review this film.
Yeah, I've not been excited about this movie.
At all.
No.
There has.
And why is that? What about the trailer turned you off?
It's really hard for me to pinpoint, like, exactly like one thing, but I think it was kind of a combination of things, like specific music and scene choices that they probably picked, but I don't know, for some reason I just got like a big feeling that like watching these kids for 2 hours was just going to be a grueling exercise of patience, and I'm not really sure what, like, made me feel that way. I just, like, I just really got that vibe from the movie trailer. So
just
like,
from the trailer?
Yeah.
The trailer of just two kids?
Yes.
Okay.
like, it's just, this is 100% based on that trailer alone. And that was it.
Here's a funny thing, Spencer. You used to work with teenagers at one point in time. Is this have anything to do with that? Were you scarred or something?
I can tell you what it is.
What was it? Please.
The Maze Runner franchise.
Oh, Lord above.
I never watched any of the trailers for Maze Runner, though.
But you saw the movies. Films.
Yeah, I did see all those films.
Yeah, that's what happened.
Man, they were
stupid. Or was it the snowball fight at the end of Pacific Rim with the
all
little
right. girl? We don't need to... You know what? Actually, I think you guys are starting to build on to why I might have had a problem. Because I've not had really good experiences with kids like in movies on this podcast.
Well... It's true, because even when we went to the theater, even when we sat down, it was myself, Chad was to my right, and then to his right was Spencer. Spencer decided to show up when Spencer darn well felt like it, and he showed up to the film.
I wasn't even that late. You were like, be there at 6:30. It was 6:33. Okay?
It was 6:49.
It was not.
There were two open seats in the theater. One of them was Spencer's.
And even when he sat down with a disdain like he was not going to enjoy himself. He was already set in his ways, like an old crotchety man who was brought to the table so that we could feed him his applesauce.
It was more of like, let's go. I don't have all of my life to waste on this experience right now.
And so even before the film started, we were kind of leaning over like, Spencer, it's going to be okay. Spencer, the movie's going to be fine. You're going to see. Watch. And you were just... Grumpity Gus to the fullest extent.
Yeah. I was.
I love how he owns it.
Yeah, like, no, I was.
It's like, yeah. No, I was
not having any of this.
So aside from, kind of dive into what else were you not looking forward to?
I was really hoping that maybe I was wrong about how annoying it was going to be, mostly because I didn't want to sit through it. And I was also just kind of like confused as to where DC was going in a general direction.
Yeah.
Because like, and like thinking about this and realizing how much Marvel is like kind of putting a push on DC to be like, hey, maybe you should have a story going together by now instead of a whole bunch of nonsense.
It's true.
So I was kind of like, how does this fit in with, like, what is the general direction of this universe? Like, because they're trying to put together something. I don't know where we're going or why we're going there. Because, like, even before Avengers, I knew we were just heading towards, like, you know, a big team-up movie. But with DC, I don't really know what we're doing.
Yeah.
So I don't know why we're stopping with this, like, doing a stop with Shazam right now.
Yeah.
But.
That's actually a really valid point, I have to admit. What about you, Chad? What were some of your expectations coming in, especially with what we've seen thus far?
You know, I would say sort of looking back to when Warner Brothers was laying out the slate of films and characters sort of on their at-bat list.
Yeah.
Not, pun not intended, actually. It's not at-bat like Batman. That was a baseball reference. But so Batman makes sense. Superman makes sense. The Flash, Cyborg to a certain extent, because he's gotten, especially with the New 52, he got a lot of like A-list status credibility versus, I think he was on the Teen Titans before, but but then he was brought into the Justice League with the New 52 when they revamped their publishing line. But, you know, Wonder Woman, obviously, and then Shazam. And again, I wasn't completely unfamiliar with him as a character, but he certainly, neither Shazam nor Black Adam, which is still in development with The Rock in the title role, neither of those characters would have made my like predictions for the first dozen movies in a unified DC expanded universe or extended universe, whatever they call it, the DCEU in film. So it was an interesting choice way back when they first said, hey, we're going to do a Black Adam film. And then they're like, oh, and we're going to do a Shazam film. And actually, that one's going to come out first and not have Black Adam in it, even though they are historically they are the polar opposite hero, anti-hero.
Yeah.
Individuals in conflict in that part of the DC Comics universe. And so it's kind of an oddity.
Yeah.
In a way, it felt a lot like when Marvel said, hey, we're gonna do Iron Man, Thor, Captain America, Hulk, the Avengers, Guardians of the Galaxy. Guardians of the Galaxy turned out to be a whopping success, and for good reason, but it wasn't the most intuitive choice.
No, by any means.
I mean, you could easily say later characters like Doctor Strange, Black Panther, Captain Marvel, those make more sense. Even Ant-Man. Ant-Man, not the version we see in the movies, but more the Hank Pym Ant-Man, was one of the founding members of the Avengers. So having an Ant-Man in there earlier would have made sense. But like Guardians was not one of those that everyone looked at it and said, oh yeah, they're a long-running franchise within the comics. They have a consistent roster. It makes a lot of sense. And we should absolutely put them in, you know, phase two out of however many they end up running. But for sure, similarly on this end, Shazam, which seems to have, by the trailer, a more comedic slant.
Yeah.
Shazam would not have made my early list either for DC. But I think that it's properties like this that they introduce a healthy variety to the overall matrix of the universe that they're building. Because if everything had the dark, gritty, grim tonality of Zack Snyder's, you know, Batman versus Superman, Justice League, whatever, it would be easy to get tired of it because it starts to feel very one note very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Which so having been,
having a punch of like a kid who turns into an adult just by saying a word, and he's still got his youthful exuberance as an adult. He's got a bright red suit and, you know, whatever. I mean, I think that's actually a pretty healthy move on their part. It just wasn't something that I saw coming.
Yeah.
So I wasn't sure what to expect other than I really have enjoyed Zachary Levi for many years as a performer.
Yeah.
And he's a super like geek culture fan.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, I mean, you know that he has deep respect for all of these characters and all of the universes because he's frequently, you know, hosting parties at Comic-Con and whatever.
Yeah.
So knowing that it's sort of a bit of a, you know, from a fan culture point of view, a bit of an insider.
Yeah.
He's not one of these guys that's going to be like, oh, yeah, I'd never heard of that character until I got the part and then I had to learn. You know, like he has the street cred, so to speak. So that was a mark in its favor, too, for me.
Yeah, no doubt. No, and it's true. Like, I think one of the biggest things that I was expecting kind of is along the same lines as you, Chad, is recognizing that this is obviously a property that is not one of the more well-known because of the fact that it delves more into the idea of magic. And DC isn't really known for their magical side. You have minor characters here and there, but in total, a lot of it is either superhuman strength, Amazonian type, alien creature, or super intelligence kind of thing. There's some type of unique part of that person that's explained in their own world within the DC comic book universe. Like, obviously, you know, Aquaman can talk to whatever because he's Atlantean. Wonder Woman's so strong and everything because she's Amazonian, you know, so forth, whatever.
Yeah.
But in this case, Shazam is one of those types of characters where it is a little bit more of kind of a kiddish type of thing because it's like it's every kid's, you know, best dream. They want to see themselves become a superhero. And even though it wasn't the most expected or, you know, warranted film to come out next for them, I think it's probably one of the smartest ones because of the fact that you're right. They've been nothing but doom and gloom for the last few years with every film they've dropped up until they started deciding to add humor into their films. They decided to stop taking themselves so seriously and start having fun with their characters. And
yeah,
bringing in Jason Momoa as Aquaman was one of those key things that just really began to bend that needle a little bit. And then with the Aquaman film, and now this one is a complete just like every kid's greatest dream to see themselves do that. What would happen if a 14-year-old kid actually became a superhero, and what would they do? And in this film, you see a lot of that. So I think my biggest expectation was to hopefully not see everything that has come before in terms of like formula and just intensity. I wanted to see a lighthearted film that I didn't have to know extreme comic book lore to get most of the references and still have fun and enjoy it. Yes, I did read the run for the New 52, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And that's all that. But I mean, like, you don't have to. Like, I didn't have to just enjoy the film. Like, I could have just gone into the film and watched it, and I hoped I would have came out just as fine, you know?
Sure.
So
you could have even gone into the film curmudgeonly like Spencer.
That's
and
true.
And possibly come out enjoying it a little bit.
That's very true.
Chad,
time
we only
will
have
tell.
Room for one Eddie on this podcast.
Yeah, that's true.
So, diving into
aye, Captain.
Oh, my gosh. We are introduced, obviously, to Angel, Asher Angel. His name Asher Angel or Angel Asher? Asher Angel. I'm just making sure. Seems
Billy Batson is the character.
Billy Batson.
We're not introduced to the actor.
You're not introduced to the actor.
The character.
The character, which is this young orphan boy who has trouble following the rules because he just wants to do his own thing and try as hard as he might to find his mom, whom he and her had been separated long ago. He's put into a home where he meets the rest of the family, i.e. Jack Dylan Grazer's character, also known as...
Freddy. that was like a big reveal. Freddy.
I'm working on my movie phone voice. Press one. So Freddy and him are ultimately roommates, and Freddy tries to be friends with him. We get to the point to where he meets the wizard, who is played by Jaman Hansu. And after all this time, Jaman Hansu has been searching for the champion, if you will, to wield the magic to keep the seven deadly sins at bay, which years prior, Thaddeus Savanna was transported, had a horrific whole turn of events, the way that whole thing turned out, and spent his whole life searching for getting back to that place.
Yeah, so this wizard guy that we've seen in the trailers.
Yes.
The actual Shazam.
The actual Shazam.
He's been searching for a champion. So he was part of a, sort of like a cadre of wizards,
mm-hmm.
His brothers and sisters. They all trapped the seven deadly sins in statue form, essentially. And he's the only one left of this group of wizards. And so he's apparently nearing the end of his life cycle, and he's looking for somebody to take up the mantle and continue safeguarding the world from the seven deadly sins. And he attempts to find the champion in various different people, none of whom really work, because when you're trying to be tested, or when you're there to be tested to see if you're pure of heart, the seven deadly sins also have sway over you and can convince you to show the part of you that's not pure.
Yeah.
And so the main villain of the piece, Thaddeus Savannah, eventually played by Mark Strong, but we see him as a boy first.
Yeah.
He's originally summoned as a potential champion for Shazam, and then he's led astray by the sins and then sent back to the real world, and he spends his whole life trying to get back to the mystical realm of Shazam because he wants to take that power after all. And in the interim, then, the wizard has been looking far and wide for the champion all over the earth, summoning people from hither and yon, and nobody's working out until, well, something goes wrong, and then he ends up summoning Billy Batson. Yep. And whether it's because Billy truly is pure of heart or because he's like the last option until Shazam finally just like keels over, that's how he ends up, you know, being the man boy, the superhero boy, man, godlike entity thing.
Yeah. That's pretty much the basis of the film in a nutshell. Mm-hmm. Really well put. Thank you, Chad.
And those are all the spoilers you're going to get.
But one of the key dynamics of the film that you also are introduced to as well are the other orphans that live in the home. You have a slew of them from Mary, who is the oldest one, Freddie that we mentioned earlier. You have Pedro, and you have what's his name?
Eugene.
Eugene, thank you, and Pedro. All these are the other kids that live within the home that Billy is sent to. And I have to agree with Chad completely and 100%. Whoever decided to make Darla an orphan, whatever possessed them to... Whoever, if anybody ever actually does that to that little girl, they should be sent out into the middle of a field and shot.
What if they died?
That's still.
Still what? They're already dead.
They could come back.
What?
It's DC. Nobody dies. Nobody stays dead.
Well, I mean, you'd think that she'd have an extended family that would want right? to take such a cute little button
Thank you,
in.
Spencer.
Hey, some people come hey. From small families.
One quick thing, just yes. to mention it. Also, the boy Eugene, who's also mm-hmm. one of the foster kids, he's played by Ian Chen from Fresh Off the Boat.
Yes, which he's perfect for the role. It really does suit him
so good.
And it's interesting that the fixation of this film, although it's focused on the story of Billy and him coming to a realization of him his own self and the power within. You still get a lot of information for the family itself. There's a very large importance in this film on the idea of family. Family not just being the people who you're related to, but the people who you choose to call family. And this film delves into that dynamic. I've never really seen or known anybody who has been an orphan or in that kind of aspect.
In the foster care system, yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to see from that perspective. Mind you, it's kind of cruddy to say my full experience of children in the foster care system has been through a movie. But nevertheless, seeing it from that perspective, it kind of does show you, like, it's really interesting how that whole process goes for a lot of kids. Like, even for the older ones who don't get picked and sent to a home because they're just bouncing from home to home because they're older. Nobody wants an older kid. Everybody wants babies and all that. So just side note, that was really interesting. But I love the fact that this film plays an importance in that overall arc of the family itself, like recognizing the family dynamic, which lends itself to a lot of that kind of 80s kids film type
totally.
Vibe where
totally.
You're like, oh, it's not just the power of me, but it's the power of we kind of thing. Spencer's rolling his eyes. Cause
yeah, no, it does have that feel a lot. Because, like,
don't be too enthused.
There
are right?
certain parts where, like, you know, it's family time, and I was just like, "Oh my gosh!" Like, I was kind of on Billy's side. I was like, "This is lame, like super
wow.
lame."
Wow, man, who tinkled in your Cheerios, buddy?
Wow.
But it's really great to see, like, a full story arc with this one, where the Goonies type of vibe, the family comes together to be this one powerhouse towards, you know, the evil that's in the world. And I think they balance it actually really well by giving us a really scary villain with Dr. Savannah. He essentially is in charge of, I guess, if you will, the powers that be that make the seven deadly sins. And you see them in the film, and it's very, they're very scary. Like, they look creepy.
Yeah, they look demonic.
Yes, exactly. And
like, it's a step beyond gargoyle status. Like, they're,
I was gonna
they're
say,
actually like gargoyle looking, but then deeply evil.
Yeah, yeah.
And creepy.
No doubt. And I think it's really interesting how they have the cutesy family dynamic on one side of the spectrum and this like these like bloodthirsty, crazed demon gargoyles who tear off people's heads. And I'm not lying. There's somebody who gets their head torn off. And people thrown out of tall buildings, and it's like, oh, okay, they tried to balance there, but
that's a wild balance, though. Like, that is just insane.
But it's an interesting choice to make that, like, that kind of presentation for people to come and see. Like, okay, so you're gonna come and see this family dynamic. There's gonna be this, and, you know, oh, cutesy, and you know, the family moments that almost made Spencer puke. And then you have on the opposite side of that spectrum, you have this villain who has no problem, like, almost like killing his own family type of thing. He's that sadistic and scary that he's willing to do things like that.
Okay, but like, the doctor himself is not scary though. Like,
but the fact that he's willing to, so you're missing the point of like the sadistic nature of somebody who's willing to do stuff like that. Like, that's scary in itself. How many doctors do you know, like, after he gives you a lollipop, then he comes at you with a Bowie knife? I mean, it's just not that's not the way it kind of pans out. Like, it just the sadistic nature of him not actually doing things on his own with his own hands, but willing those things to happen.
Well, and yeah, he's, like, that's... fully under the thrall of the seven deadly sins. Like, he struts around as though he's the one in charge. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there's a distinct undercurrent of, no, you've become possessed by these entities at the same time.
Yeah, and that's what makes him not scary, because, you know, it's not really him. It's just these other things that are just pushing him around.
Mm. Well, and it's interesting that, you know, with such that kind of the way they chose to go with that villain, using Billy Batson, the character of Shazam, to kind of add a lot of the comedic element. Zachary Levi as Shazam is actually really refreshing for a superhero film. Seeing this film kind of compared to the rest of what's in this universe, because there's many mentions of everything else that's going on, like Batman's obviously in this, Superman. It's in the franchise. It's in the universe, the DCEU. So you know, like, all those dark color palettes and everything like that, that's all there. And then you have Shazam. And I think one of the great things about Zachary Levi is he plays a really great big kid in this film. And I just think in general, but...
Totally. Well, and I don't remember a lot of, like, deep cuts of Shazam / DC's Captain Marvel back in the day. But he always struck me as, number one, a bit of a sideline character.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, not a comedic character. Like, I never thought that he was written in a way that was meant to be funny, charming, endearing, gregarious, you know, whatever. Like, I didn't think that, like, he was a little bit more serious and removed from, like, I don't, has he ever been a part of the Justice League or the Justice Society of America or whatever? Like, maybe, but not routinely, not in the way that the more prominent characters within the universe are. He kind of just is in his own space. And I always got the impression growing up, you know, that his space was more of a contemplative zone for some reason. But having Zachary Levi in the role here and the way that they've positioned the character, it's primarily comedic, I would say.
Yeah.
Like, it's a very enjoyable ride, you know, minus the creepy Seven Deadly Sins characters. That's true. I mean, it's a really fun movie.
Yeah.
And I never got the impression that Shazam was a fun character.
No, very true. And I think so reading from the New 52, this run where the film's based on, I think they do have Billy Batson kind of spot on. He's a little bit more of a jerk in the comic books. Like, truly, when he starts out, like, he's completely, you know, derogatory to the social worker that he works with. And it's interesting how they portray him in the comic books. But in the film, I think they do a really good job portraying him in a better light. And the transition from him to Shazam, there's not much in terms of, like, oh, comedic parts, like a lot of what's in the film. But there's a lot of moments in the comic books where you do see, oh, well, I didn't mean to do that. Oh, my gosh, I didn't know I was that strong. Oh, my God. Like, a lot of the 1988 movie Big, a lot of those moments, like, oh, these pants don't fit anymore, whatever, or oh, yeah, I can't wear this jacket anymore because it's too small, moments like that in the comic. I think Zachary Levi brings a lot of himself into this role.
Sure.
Because, like Chad was saying, he is one of the biggest geeks in that circle of, like, celebrities and whatnot. He goes every year just about to Comic-Con. He does throw these crazy after parties, like some of these crazy secret parties, or he'll take over a whole entire place, you know, during Comic-Con, like at a club or at a bar, and he'll have some kind of random party.
Well, and like a rotating list of, you know, celebrity guests throughout the different days and all of it, yeah.
Yeah. And so it's really cool. And to answer your question, Captain Marvel's actually been in the Justice League a few times, including the Justice League of America series during the 1970s run, as well as the Justice League 1987 run. So just to kind of add...
Well, again, I mean,
but that's way back when.
Any superhero is probably going to have been part of a team at some point, but he's not, like, associated with a team.
Not that I know of.
Much like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of an analog in the Marvel side of things that we've seen in the movies. Most of the ones that we've seen in the movies are associated with, like, camaraderie and teaminess mm-hmm. at some point. But, yeah, I don't know. Shazam just never struck me as a fixture of a team the way that Superman is or Wonder Woman or Aquaman even.
Yeah. And going back to Zachary Levi, just I think the best part about this film is you can tell that Zachary Levi is just having so much fun with this role. Like, it's so great to see that not only, like Chad mentioned earlier, is he embodying a role that he just started researching as of late, it's somebody that he's probably well aware of and a storyline that he's probably read a few times and he's very knowledgeable of, and the fact that he also has a great amount of respect for the character. Not many times do you ever really see that. Like, I've heard the story about when Hugh Jackman first went out and did the research for Wolverine for the first X-Men film. Yeah. And he wasn't sure as to how he was supposed to act, so he actually mimicked his character's movements as more of cat-like than it was like what he is now, because he didn't know, he wasn't aware of who Wolverine was. And so it's interesting to find, you know, people who know of the character, know of the storyline, and can have like a really good base knowledge to bring already to the stage.
Yeah, I mean, very similar to like what we saw when Ryan Reynolds was allowed to be actual Deadpool, not like stupid Deadpool.
Yeah, and it's that's a great example too, because it's almost like for Ryan Reynolds, he was born, he loved the character so much he was born to play it. I mean, practically, and
I mean, basically, he patterned his real life after the character. Obvious.
I was gonna say I didn't want to say it out loud, but it is pretty obvious.
It is concerning.
Some might say inspiring, but
there you go. But
I think
that's something to take note in terms of utilizing more comedic parts, making the film fun, making the film, even with the element of a deadly villain who is possessed by God knows what those are, the film itself still holds like a lot of great family elements. Like, and I say family to a certain degree, like family film type elements. Like, I think back like on things like The Goonies, you know, things where families had to come together, you know, don't tell mom the babysitter's dead, you know, those type of elements in the films where groups of people who are like a family come together and they work together. And that element is very obvious.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely got that undertone of the family that you choose.
Yeah.
Not the family you're born into. And they're a little on the nose with it a couple times, but I would say overall it's an earned, you know, part of the story. It's really interesting to see a superhero origin story that involves being a member of a foster family group home.
Yeah.
Where the parents of that group home are former foster kids themselves, you know, where they have lived through what, you know, their kids are now living through. And they, you know, like, it was really charming in its way. Like, it's not your typical story. You have somebody who's, you know, fully integrated with whatever the family unit is, or you've got a total outcast sort of finding their own way. This kind of had some sort of a middle ground, you know, not totally unlike something like the X-Men, where they all go to a school and that's where they get their peer group or whatever. But there was more warmth in this. The kids are not living in a school together. They go to school and they're living in a home together.
Yeah.
So there was a really sweet spot right in that groove. And a lot of that is actually due to the way that they wrote the kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very authentically. I mean, it felt like a group of kids. It didn't feel like a group of child characters written by adults.
Yeah.
Those are the worst.
No, it really is, because like, you can totally tell like their language is just off, the way their body movement, their body language is like, you need to go back and relearn how to be a 5-year-old. Step back. Stop doing taxes.
But mother, I want more vegetables for dinner. Like, weird things like that. No kid ever said that.
But I think it's a great choice. Like, for me personally, I think it's a great choice to begin turning that tide of the DC universe, if you will, and begin having fun with it. Like, obviously, Shazam is one of those ones where only the box office numbers are going to really tell the tale of whether this film, you know, succeeds or not. More than likely it will, because it is a DC film and there's a huge fan base for it. But it simply lies in the fact that this is not your typical DC film. This doesn't have the dark color palettes. It doesn't have, you know, the Martha element. There's no muddy name Martha in this movie. Like, oh my gosh, Spencer even said it before the film, like, Martha, like, what? So I guess actually there was a Martha element in the film, because Spencer said it before.
Spencer introduced it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I think transitioning from, because it's like a spectrum almost. You see the transition from what they started with, which was more of an artistic touch with Man of Steel. It was a beautiful film. Transitioning from that to BVS, which was just a train wreck in itself. Transitioning that to Justice League, which had a little bit more of a comedic element, but it was still really rooted in that, like, seriousness,
yeah,
and the brooding of, you know, Batman and whatnot.
Well, and I mean, you had that, you know, two different drivers,
yeah,
effect, because a lot of the comedy arguably most likely came from Joss Whedon taking over in the 11th hour,
yeah,
to reshoot parts of the film and then finish it out.
And then you had Suicide Squad, which actually that happened with the film. Apparently the film had screened with other people and they said it was too dark and it was just too, just not good. So they cut it up and added more comedic elements, which are super visible. Like, you can totally tell where they went.
Sure.
Where they added, like, the more colorful parts to make it more fun for the audience. And then you transitioned over with Wonder Woman, an actually great story that has a good through and through, then Aquaman and blah, 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 and thus far. I really like that, but I don't know if everybody else is going to like it. And I say that not to try to upset anybody, but because we've heard DC people say, like, oh, well, Marvel's like all Disney and fun and games, whatever, and DC's, you know, serious and it's whatever. And I don't know how many actual DC fans are like that out there. Like, I really only know of a few DC fans who are diehard when it comes to the films. But that's what the majority of them say. I don't know. What have you guys heard, or what do you guys think? Do you think this type of film for DC is going to actually work?
I think that when you have an established fan base of anything,
mm-hmm,
then that fan base is going to see it.
Yeah.
They might not like it, but you have a built-in audience there. The bigger question is, will the mainstream audience, who isn't devoted to any particular, you know, comic publisher or source material of whatever kind, you know, will a broader audience embrace it and, number one, want to go see it, number two, promote it with their own circle of contacts and say, hey, you actually should go see it, it's fun.
Yeah.
So I think, like, you know, the hardcore DC fans, I think hardcore Marvel fans, both will go see this movie.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got some guaranteed ticket sales. I think there are fans of the TV show Chuck who will go see it, because those who really liked that show really liked that show. Like, yeah, it was a bit of a cult classic in the making, you know, when it was on the air. Not everybody liked it, but those who did really, really liked it. You know, so Zachary Levi has a draw all, yeah, his own. Who knows? Maybe, I don't really know anything about Asher Angel's show on the Disney Channel, but maybe, mm-hmm, you'll have a younger audience built in because of that. I think you've got a pretty good mix of elements going in, and the execution is not bad.
No.
Is it like one of the best superhero movies I've ever seen? No. I think that, especially when you look at, you know, essentially, yes, Zachary Levi is a grown man, but his character on the inside is a 14-year-old boy.
Yeah.
And so the hero is a 14-year-old boy.
Yeah.
So really you're looking at other teenage heroes, and I think really compare Shazam as a teenage hero to something like Into the Spider-Verse, Lesson 142, with a teenage hero, and that's where you start to see some of the different ways that a similar type of story can be told.
Yeah.
Differently. Like, and I would say, if I'm comparing, you know, those two teenage superheroes, I would say Into the Spider-Verse edges it out, but a lot of that's because of the style. Like, mm-hmm. stylistically, it was a gorgeous,
yeah,
brilliant new format kind of experience.
That's true.
Shazam is a live action with heavy visual effects, live action superhero film. You know, so it has a different level of appeal, but I think that it definitely does have an appeal.
What about you, Spence? What do you think?
I'd be shocked if, like, this did poorly with DC fans, because this is kind of like the better movie of the DC universe, really. Because it does just do things differently than they have before. So, this one's a hard one for me to really figure out how long-term fans would really accept this movie. Mostly because I have a hard time figuring out how long-term fans have been okay with what's been happening in the DC universe thus far.
So, question their knowledge, Spencer. I'm not questioning anyone's knowledge.
I'm just like, for me, it's hard for me to like really get into like this frame of mind. And I'm not trying to like bash on anyone who like really liked. I'm not trying to, but like, it's just hard for me to put myself in someone else's shoes on how they might perceive this movie.
Yeah. No, and that makes perfect sense, because it's like you think about it and you're right. From this point prior, the same people who we're hoping are going to be open to this type of film, this transition, if you will, are the same ones that we also know were defending films such as BVS,
yeah,
as well as Justice League.
I remember talking to someone about that whole Martha scene. And like, they were explaining, oh, it's because their moms had the same name. And I'm like, I just stared at them and I was like, you figured this out in the theater without thinking about it? And he's like, yeah. And I was just so perplexed by the whole thing. Like, they were so, for me, that was so much of a leap. Like, I could not put that together. It took me days afterwards to really figure out what the heck was happening in that scene.
Okay, like, I understand how strongly a lot of DC fans feel towards them actually having an established universe, cinematic universe, because that's understandable. That's like, you know, you're creating a Lego playset, and it's not the best looking, but gosh darn it, it's yours. That whole mindset, you know, I get,
absolutely,
I get that, and I see it, but I feel like the fans forget the fact that they have the power to say, I want this, but I don't want it like this. You know, like, I want a cinematic universe, but it shouldn't be this way. And they've chosen to defend their films and everything that's been thus far created, however they've done it. It's whatever. But the hope here is that with everything they've seen prior to, that it doesn't get in the way of what they're going to see with this film, like the lighter color palettes, the way the film has more comedy in it, the way, I mean, the film seriously doesn't take itself too serious. It has fun with it. It definitely delves into all the influences that made this film it. Like we were mentioning, Big, there's a fun scene that you see it and instantly you're like, oh, that's, yeah, from the movie.
Totally. It's like, oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And the whole idea of, you know, citing inspiration from Stranger Things, which Stranger Things cites inspiration from all kids' 80s movies, I think it's just an honest, you know, to God homage to everything that was great during the 80s, all the 80s family films.
Tonally, yeah. It's not one of those, it's not derivative in the way that, I mean, obviously Stranger Things is set in the 80s, so it's... you know, all the clothing styles and the cars that they drive and the music they listen to and the things that they talk about, like, all of it is like, you are steeped in the 80s,
yeah,
in Stranger Things, or, you know, a sitcom like Meet the Goldbergs or something. You know, it's
yeah,
it's a big deal. Here it's more, you're borrowing some of the motifs and the tone from some things that were really enjoyable coming out of the 80s, and you're applying it in a modern context because it's set in the modern day. And I mean, even to the point of like setting it in Philadelphia, right?
Yeah.
And the mentions of Rocky and all of it, you know, like that, one of like the hallmarks of cinema is the Rocky franchise.
Yeah.
Like it or not, and we like it. You can hear some of our reviews on the Creed franchise, but like even that is yet another way of referencing it without feeling dated.
Exactly.
You know, because you're referencing it, you're tipping your hat. Those of us who've seen those movies or TV shows or whatever are going to sit there and say, oh, that's like from that movie, or that's like from that thing, or, oh, yeah, it's clever.
Yeah.
But it's done in its own way, and it still feels fresh.
Yeah. And it does it so well. Like, it's one of those types of things where you can definitely tell they're not trying to rip off of anything. They're just trying to give honor to what has come before. And you have to respect that. I mean, a film that does that and does so knowingly while letting the audience know, this is where we gain our inspiration from. If you've seen those movies, you're definitely going to like these parts of the films. It's obvious, and it's a good kind of obvious. And I think that's something to definitely applaud for this particular film, as well as the direction where DC is wanting to go. Like, I really hope that we don't get those purists who come out and say, well, Shazam actually, you know, was 5'6". He wasn't 5'7" like Zachary Levi. And
oh,
he was also, you know,
people.
Like, because there are people like that on both sides, obviously, DC and Marvel, as well as other franchises, people who liked Ender's Game, people who like Maze Runner. There's all those that come up and talk. But wrapping this whole thing up, because obviously we're not going to talk about how this film ends, but the film does have a very climactic ending. Where if you've read the comic books, the New 52 run, it's pretty cool. So you'll get a lot of that inspiration from that and kind of get an idea as to what happens in the book, in the film.
Let's just say, don't even visit the IMDb page, because there are performers in the movie whose roles are hidden on IMDb, and there's a reason for it. So just don't even go looking. Just let the movie happen the way it happens.
Also, some of them aren't hidden like they should be. And
true.
It's kind of a spoiler.
It's true. So wrapping this whole thing up, just to let everybody know, there are two end credit scenes. There's a mid-credit scene and an end credit scene. So you want to stick around for both of those. We saw a press screening. So sometimes they kind of trick us with a interesting end credit scene or mid credit scenes. Sometimes it's not always.
I was going to say, it's the mid credit scene, right? That,
yeah.
That was the dumb one. Well, sorry. Non-judgmental. it was the challenging one. The end credit scene was actually the fun one, right?
Yeah.
I already forget. It was yesterday. I don't remember.
Yeah,
but
I only
one of them.
One of them.
One of them was enjoyable. The other one was aggravating.
It was the last one that you enjoyed. So stick around for those. It may not be the same ones that we saw, just because it's a press screening and sometimes they don't reveal those to the press. They're made specifically sometimes for the actual audiences when the film goes out. So wrapping this up, was there anybody who had any last minute thoughts, complaints, anything? Spencer, I'm looking at you and I'm like, after all that experience, all the family fun wholesomeness, and you still, how did you come out of this film thinking?
Well, definitely I was very impressed with the ending.
Uh-huh.
Because DC didn't do what they normally do, which is not take the fun way out of a situation. They actually took the fun way, and it was actually really great. I really enjoyed the end of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I was actually really excited about
no,
this.
No, hold on. Because
we know what we're fishing for.
We're fishing
Spencer.
For a specific thing, because the film ended, lights went down, lights went up, we both turned, myself and Chad, leaned forward, looked to the right to see Spencer, I tapped you on the leg and said, hey, what'd you think? And you said a specific phrase that I was still saying to myself even before I went to bed last night.
Literally all day today, that's all I can think
that's
about.
That's all I was thinking about. I need to hear those words.
All right, so what I said at the theater was, you know, I really don't think I could have kids. These children were so ridiculous. And I understand they're fictional children. But just the idea that that could happen to me and I'm stuck with them for 18 years? That's too much. I just don't.
He's already putting a statute of limitations on his time with potential future children.
It's like a jail sentence or something. Except you're out in the real world.
I'm so glad this is going to be published and put on the internet where it'll live forever. And then when you find someone and you actually have a child.
Oh, yeah. The adoption worker is going to be like, we found this podcast from like super long ago. Would you like to talk about
it? Not even. I'm going to wait until your child is of a certain age. And I'm going to say, son, let me tell you something about your dad. Let me play you this clip. And he's going to hear what you said. And yeah, I'm going to give it to him as a gift.
They'll probably be used to it.
Be used to it.
So yeah, that was
all right. You got your
I did. I feel better now. I can breathe easier.
Little moment of truth.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Chad, any other last minute highlights or issues that you had?
The only thing I'd like to point out as kind of a closing thought before we rate this thing is I would prefer for it to stand alone. There's a certain aspect where Freddy, the foster brother who has the crutch, he is a like super fan of superheroes. He nominates himself the hero manager once his foster brother becomes Shazam and he finds out about it. So that's a really fun, you know, beat throughout the film. But you know, you've got a Batarang in there. You've got some other references. If you've seen the trailers, I'm not telling you anything you don't know. But aside from the references to the broader universe, I think it really works as its own thing. I really don't see Shazam joining the Justice League. I just don't think it would be necessary. I think the way that they've crafted the story thus far, he really works with his pod of characters well, and I don't think that it would be, you know, a huge benefit aside from a cameo appearance or something. I don't really see, you know, an Avengers style integration team up play personally.
Well, I mean, and mind you, who knows what the DC Warner Brothers teams will start thinking, because like I said, if this film...
they'll change their mind next week.
That's true. I think one thing to highlight for myself, and this was kind of reported on a few weeks ago, but it was great to actually see it. The fact that Jack Dylan Grazer's Freddy actually calls... he actually calls Shazam Captain Sparklefingers in the film. It's hilarious because of the fact that Captain Sparklefingers is actually a name that Kelly Sue DeConnick from the actual Captain Marvel run for Marvel.
In Marvel Comics,
In Marvel Comics. She actually has that as one of the nicknames of Captain Marvel. So it was an interesting kind of like nod, tip your hat to the other Captain Marvel. Mm-hmm. I think that was just one of the fun things that I noticed, the little thing that I want to highlight.
I mean, how crazy is it though, really?
Yeah.
Meta, that the two characters from comic book universes who are both named Captain Marvel, their movies, which are very tonally different from each other, time period is different, cinematic universe is obviously different, they release within a month of each other. That's really trippy.
It really is. So wrapping up this conversation, we're gonna go around the table, and I want to start with Chad this time.
Oh hi.
And I want to know, does the film pass or fail, and how many monocles?
It definitely will pass for me. I was thinking about this last night. I was talking to my fiance on the phone, and she always asks me if we've seen a movie, you know, the day before we record the episode, she'll say, what do you think you're going to rate it? You know, just as a gauge. And oftentimes my first impression is the lasting impression, and I'm like, oh, I'll give it a 2. I'll give it a 4. I'll give it a 1. You know, I'll give it a 0. I'll give it a 5, whatever. And I usually stick with it. And what I kind of went back and forth, and I said, you know, I think I'm going to probably land at a 3.5.
Okay.
However, in talking through things and reminiscing a little bit, I'm gonna upgrade it. I'm gonna give it a 4, but very specifically, that little girl
Yes.
Darla, you are at least one whole monocle of that vote, of that rating. So cheers to you. You are darling and adorable. She's the kind of like performer and character that you just kind of want to not trap in a creepy way, but like not let her age. Like,
it's true.
It would be amazing to have like 10 years of movies with that Darla,
yeah,
at that age, which you can get away with in cartoons, but you can't do with live action. So I'm sure she's going to grow up into a lovely older girl and young woman and whatever eventually, but like she's so cute. Like,
yeah,
she's so, and tonally, like she is pitch perfect in what they need her to do in this movie, and you just want more of her. She's like a little security blanket or something. Like, she's so cute. So anyway, I was going to give it a 3.5. Because of her, I'll upgrade it to a full 4 monocles.
There you go. It's interesting. She kind of reminds me of Raven Simone from when she was little on The Cosby
yes.
Show. And then she grew up and started on, what was that?
Well,
That's So Raven?
No, the talk show that
the
she's
View.
On. The View. Yeah.
The View.
Yeah, Spencer, let's go ahead and turn this around. Spencer, does the film pass or fail? And how many monocles? Be honest.
Let's see. As a movie, it passes.
Man, don't sound so enthusiastic.
As a, like, you should adopt kids type thing. Kind of fails that.
This is not a PSA for adopting children, Spencer.
Yeah.
We should have looked at the credits more often, see what this film was funded by. Orphans of America or something.
Oh, gosh. Hands Across America.
Hands Across America.
Nope, let's not go there. This movie was okay. Like, the good ending. So I will give it 3.
You're going to give it 3 monocles?
Yes.
All right. The film passes for me. It definitely was a fun ride. I enjoyed it from beginning to end. I saw all the references it made. I definitely dug what they were trying to do in terms of showing the idea of a DC film actually being lighthearted, being more family friendly in terms of the fun, the comedy, even certain elements where it's like the overcoming of evil with the power of love kind of thing. Like, it had all those elements, and that's all indicative of like what the 80s film, you know, era was about. So a film passes on that. I'm gonna give it 4 because of the fact that I really did enjoy a lot of the things that were in this film. I did have a few issues here and there. Story-wise, there was, some scenes, in particular one of the end credit scenes, that I just was not fond of because it didn't make sense to me. It was one of those things that was like, you were doing so great, and then you got to this point, and unless I hadn't have read that comic, I'd have no clue what this is talking about, but you did that. So, minus that and a couple other little just consistency issues, the film overall was great. So, I'm going to give it a 4, and I'm hoping that DC continues on this train of creating this type of film. So, yeah. Well, that about wraps it.
It's pretty positive.
That is a pretty positive review.
Shazam. Spencer.
That about wraps up another awesome episode of The Film Philosophers. Let us know what you think on our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmphilosophers. Or our Twitter page at twitter.com/filmphilosophy101. Let us know what you think as the film debuts this Friday. So if you get a chance, head to your local theater, get your tickets, and get in the seats. If you're planning not to see this film, there's a couple other upcoming weekend releases. You got The Best of Enemies, starring Sam Rockwell and Taraji P. Henson. And you also have the 2019 remake of Pet Sematary. So.
Skip it.
And of course, you can check out all of our previous episodes at filmlosophers.com. So, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Chad.
I'm Spence.
Shazam.
Class dismissed.